Really glad to be able to have our guest this morning. The Emeritus Interviews guest number one is Glenn Pichard. Tomorrow, Senator Dave Luchtefeld. First off, Glenn, morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Second, you know what? You presented me with a real problem, and I need your help.
Okay.
All right? So, I can say, just as I did with Senator Luchtefeld, it's not so easy for you. I mean, when you start looking at, you were a coach, you were a teacher, you were a senator, you were a state representative, you were in the U.S. Army, you were the chancellor of SIU, president of the board at SIU, you have a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD. I should be calling you Dr. Glenn Pichard.
Oh, no.
Right? When I started looking at this House of Representatives, 89 to 99, Illinois Senate from 84 to 89, a gubernatorial candidate, what would you call yourself? I have a problem, so help me out. How do you define your, well, you're giving me an inferiority complex after I read this. Me? What about you? How do you define yourself like that?
Blessed.
Yeah?
Very blessed, Tom. I've been very fortunate. Raised about 50 miles from here, not far from where you were raised, over in southeastern Illinois. And, you know, I owe so much of my life to SIU. I got out of the Army and went over there on the GI Bill and got me started on an education career. And then because I had a dad that worked on WPA and a mom, and they kind of were Roosevelt and Truman people, you know, as I was growing up. And so I learned some politics there and
at the dinner table
service, and, you know, I branched off into things. And I'm just very fortunate the people of Southern Illinois saw fit to elect me to office.
So you literally started in a one-room school.
Oh, well, it was two-room school, but there were four grades in each room.
Right.
But back then, they didn't have kindergarten, Tom, and I started a first grade when I was 5 years old. And when I got in the sixth grade, there had been three kids in that grade, and one of them moved off, and so they had me take the fifth and sixth grade together in 1 year. And I started high school when I was 12 years old.
All right. 12 years old.
That wasn't unusual back then.
Yeah, no, and starting off.
Yeah.
Okay, so first CAV in Korea.
Yep.
What'd you do there?
Well, I was up on the DMZ with the 1st CAV Division, and walked a lot of guard duty at night. I was in the finance corps and headquarters company, but we all had to serve guard duty. And most of the time out on guard duty, I was thinking about getting home and starting to SIU. That was my dream. And I got discharged on December 27th, 1965. And on January 3rd, I was at SIU going through the Woody Shuffle.
DMZ 64 was a different thing than it is today. It was a lot more tense,
yeah,
for one thing. And quite frankly, my other friends who were there at that time says, you think you know what cold is. No, you don't until go to South Korea.
Oh, it was cold. Walking on those hills was so cold. Yeah, it was.
So you're in the field thinking, if you know, Lord, if you'll get me out of here and I get back to SI, pretty close?
Yeah, right? Very close.
Okay. It's not a foxhole to pray in because the ground was too hard to dig.
That's right.
Right? You say, get me home. So when you got out of the Army, you were thinking about SIU, but at that point, were you thinking about joining education as a teacher, or are you thinking about higher ed? I mean, where were you at that point?
No, Tom, my first love was baseball, and all I wanted to do was be a coach. I graduated with a degree in physical education. I was there when SIU had their golden years, you know.
The Tigers you're talking about are Doc Freeburg years.
Absolutely. Those were great years. You know, you had all those great teams with Walt Frazier and basketball. We won like
Buckminster Fuller.
Buckminster Fuller was there teaching. I mean, those were golden years, and I was real happy to be there. It was a tumultuous time, though, as you remember, Tom. Things were going on with the Vietnam War, with the Civil Rights Movement, with the environmental movement, with the women's movement.
I mean, not very many people remember this, but the National Guard was called out in Carbondale.
They sure were. They sure were. I was standing on the steps of Shryock Auditorium waiting for my wife to get out of class, And there was a whole procession of several hundred kids coming up the street to take over the hall where ROTC was located, because they were saying there was a conspiracy with the government, and it was all about the Vietnam War.
Right.
And they get up there, and they see the National Guard has surrounded the building, Wheeler Hall, where ROTC is, with the state police, gas mask on, all kinds of stuff. The kid that was on the megaphone marching the students up there, he turns around to the kids and says, "Forget Wheeler, get Woody." And they just turn in mass and take
and
over Woody
other place.
Hall.
Right.
You remember all
I
those
do.
Things.
You know, what's weird was out in the hinterlands, as far the way you got from Carbondale, Mom and Dad, and if you go to college, you're not going to SIU.
Right.
That was the effect of
it. Right.
It scared people in Southern Illinois to see that.
It really
because
did.
Because it was something they were used to seeing maybe in Chicago at the Democratic Convention, but yep. The streets of SIU was a different thing.
Not in Carbondale.
All right. So now at this point, you then become a teacher in Galatia?
I did. That's my first teaching job
teaching
and coaching
what?
Job. Pardon me?
Teaching what?
I taught history. I taught government. I taught phys ed and coach three sports.
And basketball?
Basketball, cross country, and...
baseball?
Baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in Galatia, that's akin to being the Arch of Canterbury. Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yeah,
it's Galatian baseball at that time.
Right.
Ooh, all right, big deal.
Yeah.
So at some point while you're here teaching, politics comes to mind.
Yeah.
Right? First race House of Representatives, was that 8? Not 89.
Actually, Tom, I first started in the state Senate.
84.
Yeah, 84. You're right.
And then 89, then House of Representatives,
yeah.
89 to 99.
In Congress, yeah.
So teacher to politics. I've always wondered about that. I mean, because, Senator Dave Luckdale was a teacher.
Yeah.
And coach.
Yeah.
Coach, right? Lucky, the coach.
Yeah.
So... what leads teachers into politics? You're not the only one. Is it that orating skill that you get before people make comfortable talking and developing relationships? Or is it that you're a teacher? I mean, I wonder.
Well, for me, I loved teaching government and the Constitution and so on to the kids. And we talked a lot back then. You know, it wasn't about partisan politics. It was about the American government and democracy and how we stood in the world and things like
very
that.
Very fundamental stuff. Yeah.
And growing up where I grew up with my dad, especially, I just always longed for politics. And I have to say, Tom, that for my generation, at least for me where I live, John Kennedy was a icon.
Same here.
Yeah, and he spoke in a way to a young generation that no one else had. And I just grew up admiring him, and it inspired me to want to go into government service one of these days.
Yeah, I think you probably find a lot of people that way,
yeah.
Even now.
Yeah, I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it. So, you're a politician, because we still haven't answered the problem, who's you? You say blessed, but I still haven't gotten the handle I'm looking for yet. I'm kind of thinking you're a human diplomat.
Well, I think there is a lot of diplomacy in growing up.
I think that's been your hallmark, though, hasn't it, Glenn?
Well, I think it's what your family gives you. You know, you either do or you don't. You know, I didn't grow up a highly partisan person. I grew up a more conservative Democrat. That was our family. And I'll just share a little story with you.
Yeah.
When I was in the state Senate, Ralph Dunn was the Republican senator in the west part of Southern Illinois, and I was the Democrat senator over here.
Well, that was a pretty – you're talking about Johns?
Ralph Dunn.
Dunn, okay.
Yeah, and I took Gene Johns' place.
All right.
So Ralph and I served together. But Ralph and I drove to Springfield together all the time up there and back. And we were good friends. And my son went up with me one week. He was about 17 years old then, spent 4 days just hanging around watching what goes on. And when we got home, I said, "Son, you know, what'd you enjoy most this week?" He said, "Dad, what I enjoyed most was riding in the backseat of the car, listening to you and Ralph Dunn swap stories about your families and your constituents and all that stuff."
Right.
Well, Tom, my son said to me, "How did we get from you and Ralph Dunn to where we are today, you know, where people don't even want to talk to each other. And it was a hard question for me to answer. I did give him an answer. If you want me to share a couple things with you, well, I'll be happy to.
Now, I see some notes over there that you have in front of you. Is this the book that's available about you on SIU Press?
Yes, it will be. I don't know if it's out yet or not.
According to the bio I read yesterday afternoon, you can get an e-book of it, or you can order a hardback copy.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So, so this is the interesting thing. This what you're talking about here is how we've gone from, hey, we can work things out, to I hate your stinking guts.
Right.
That's not hyperbole.
No, it isn't.
That's actually a little pulled in.
It's reality.
Right.
Unfortunately.
So, what was your response to your son?
Here's what I said to my son. I said, maybe it begins with a notion that life is only about wins and losses, so whatever it takes to win is most important. The end justifies the means. So we don't have to see the other side. We don't have to compromise, and the chasm grows between us. Maybe our fear of public failure or criticism means we don't have the courage to be imperfect, so we present this false image of perfection and strength, making it difficult to see others as anything but weak, masking our own sense of weakness. Maybe our intolerance of differences makes enemies of other races, religions, ethnicities, so judgment becomes more important than mercy or compassion. Maybe our sense of self-preservation is so great it prevents us from caring about preserving the life and integrity of others.
So you present this as a lot more complicated issue than I think at face value people look at it right now.
Because I think it is complicated, Tom. You know, I'll tell you a little story. When I first went to the state Senate, President Rock, who's a Democrats had a 31-28 majority in the Senate. He called the freshman senators in, the new freshman senators. There's only like four of us. And here's what he said to us. He said, whatever you got to do up here to get back here, that's what you do. Don't worry. If you got to stand up and knock the crap out of Chicago, you're not going to worry me. The most important thing is to win and to get back here.
Okay. Now, that in Springfield was also the message you heard when you went to Washington.
Absolutely. The same message. The same message.
Because if you're going to get reelected, we want you on the phones 2 or 3 hours a day, every day, collecting money.
Yeah.
Starting today.
Absolutely.
I just got here. I don't know where the bathroom is.
The first 2 weeks I was in Congress, we had a meeting of the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, and they said, here's your goal. Your goal is to raise $5,000 a day every day of the week. I'm going, you got to be kidding.
Yeah, well, when you're used to, all right, because I cut some of your first radio advertising, Glenn Beshard will push hard for Southern Illinois, right? My voice was not quite as deep in 1970, whatever 80 this was.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's interesting is you take that and you start upscaling it to Washington. It is a daunting.
Oh, it's very daunting. And Tom, look what's happened. In our last election for governor here, at one time we had 4 billionaires in the race. And our present-day governor is a billionaire. You know, we can't get to the point where money's all that counts.
Just for kind of giggles, the other day I said, asked Google how much it would cost to run for Senate. And Google came up with a number, $16 million.
Unreal. Unreal. But that's what it's come down to. So unless you've spent your whole life in the party, working your way up from precinct committeeman on up, or unless you're a wealthy person, you can't compete in American politics today. You just can't do it. And that's wrong, because you and I both know tons of people that would make great representatives or senators or whatever, have no chance of even getting in the process.
Absolutely right.
It's not right.
The citizen, Now, I want to ask you another question.
Okay.
Will Rogers says, diplomacy is the act of saying nice doggy, until you can pick up a stick. All right? Now, I get that, and I know you do too, but I have a distinct feeling that's not your opinion.
No, it isn't, because if I've got to step on my fellow brother, I don't care what his politics is, to get to where I would like to go legitimately, then where do I end up in all this? If I got to stand up and bash Chicago in the 1980s when I'm in a state senator, okay, that's what leads today to people saying we ought to divorce ourselves from Chicago in this state. You know, it's that attitude. And Tom, we just can't go down that road. You know, we're Republicans, we're Democrats, we're independents, but we're Americans. And that's got to take precedence over everything else. We're not so far apart when we're willing to sit down and talk to each other over the kitchen table. But doggone it, when we let these people determine the campaign's got to be finding out all the dirt you can find on somebody and spending all the money you can spend, I don't get it.
Yeah. I just got a text coming in on the American Mind text line. Says, Glenn's one of my favorite people. You know, we talked all about politics, but academia, you know, and it's easy. I don't think it's easy, but I know I've done it. I don't appreciate the amount of time president of Southern Illinois University after Mr. Walker and before Mr. Dunn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's from 2006 to 2014. Is that right?
Yes.
Yikes. So here's the most difficult question. Talk about student loans, and you see how much people rack up on loans. Even you talked about the VA, you know, GI bills, what helped you. Yeah. Is college worth the money if you have to take out a $200,000 loan?
Well, the research shows you'll make, you know, so much more if you're a college graduate. But there's no way that kids ought to be going in debt for $200,000.
Should banks not? Because, and some people have told me that banks shouldn't be, you wouldn't loan $200,000 for the kid to buy a house. But you will for a college?
Well, yeah, you will, because you know that the government's backing up the loan. That's why they loan it, because they're not, the banks are probably not going to end up losing money on it. But, you know, I still struggle with just wiping out everybody's loans. I mean, I took out loans when I went to school, and by golly, it took a long time for me to pay them off.
And if I could have afforded to go to college, grandparents didn't want me to go to SIU because those doggone troublemakers are there.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But still, that's the option, right? An engineering department with, you know, with what I'd learned, you know, I would have done it, and I get that.
Well,
but some people say it's not. You know, it's interesting. When you look at this, you've done a lot. Like I said, when I started reading everything you've done, and I haven't, I mean, I didn't even mention, you know, husband and father, right?
Yeah.
I mean, while you were doing all these things, you were doing, you know, a couple of kids. I hope Joe's doing well, by the way.
Joe's doing good.
What do you think your greatest accomplishment is? You've got all these things laid out before you right now, Glenn. You're not done. I mean, you've got the Pichard thing, doing a lot of stuff for kids that need help.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think your biggest accomplishment is? Or was maybe your biggest accomplishment a failure that you learned something out of that you made an accomplishment later?
Well, Tom, I tell you, even though at one time I went through a divorce, okay, I still think my biggest accomplishment is I've been a pretty good dad. I've tried to be a good dad. And so I think any time the professional things that you do in life take precedent over the personal things you do with your own kids, that's a tough call. And there are a lot of times, Tom, when, you know, I was out there doing the work of the people when I should have been back home doing the work that I needed to be doing as a father.
You know, what's interesting is I've known you long enough to know when I hear in your voice sadness.
Yeah.
And that's what I just heard.
It's very sad. You know, I was in Washington, D.C., taking care of the business of the people when my daughter was, I think it was homecoming queen in high school. And I got it on tape, but I wasn't there when I should have been there. And so things like that, when you're a public servant, you sometimes forget what the really important priorities are in your life.
Yeah,
and
I don't think that's, I don't think it's solely in politics.
Probably not. I remember when I first went to Congress, the elder statesman from Kentucky who had never missed a vote in Congress in like 30 years sat down on the floor of the House with me. And so I was determined never to miss a vote. And he said, let me tell you something, son. He said, it's not worth it.
I can believe that.
You know.
Right?
Yeah.
But only after you've had the experience. You don't know on the gut level.
Yeah.
We've got like a minute left. Glenn Pichard, the first of our emeritus interviews. And I'm really glad you were the first, too.
Thanks, Tom.
Because, you know, I know you and I both are willing to dabble in the esoteric.
Right.
and I wonder, what do you see in the future for Southern Illinois? And I do this because one-room school, White or Hamilton?
White County.
White County.
Yeah.
Galatia, a city fueled by coal jobs,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Harrisburg.
Right.
You've gone to SIU. You've seen generations of students and impacted right. them in lots of different ways. Yeah. You know, it's from Springfield. You have the view from 100,000 feet for Southern Illinois. What yeah. do you see?
I do have that view because I have been, you know, had a good career. But it's the roots that I see that are important for us in Southern Illinois. People who are born and raised here love Southern Illinois. It's an uncommon love, you know, and they find their way back here so many times after being all over the place. I don't want to be anywhere else. I want to be someone known as never having lost my roots right here in Southern Illinois, right here in the hill country of Southern White County. That's what I love.
Home.
Yeah, it's home.
Carl Ortel, you remember Carl?
Yeah, I remember Carl.
He used to say, you know, people go, they work their entire lives and they're in Chicago and they go, you know, I hope I get to retire in Southern Illinois.
Right.
And he says, well, why not just move there now and live your entire life there if you like it so much? Yeah. The price is cheaper. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
it is. It's a good place.
It's a great place. You look at all the stuff we've got here. We just had some good friends move here from California and bought a little place out south of Carbondale. They love it. They absolutely love it.
Good.
And, you know, that I've heard that story 1,000 times, Tom.
Yeah. Glenn Pichard, the first of our emeritus interviews. I'm glad you came in.
Thank you, sir.
You got any last-minute wisdom? Got anything intrinsic to Glenn Pichard that you can share with us before I let you go today? I mean, I've got rules for life that I try to, you know, be nice to everybody. It doesn't cost anything.
Yep.
That's rule number one. Number two is some people, you just can't be nice to them. You know, I wonder, yep. what you do have rules?
Yeah, well, one thing my father, I watched my father, observed him, taught me growing up. My dad was a very generous man, even though he had no material wealth whatsoever, but he was generous. He'd give his last penny to a neighbor. And I've seen him help people before he'd help himself. And they would say, no, Ezra, I don't do that. And he'd go, now don't deprive me of the gift of giving. So I think that's a rule that I probably learned from my dad, Tom, that's probably as good as anything I've got.
But you don't know it. It's all academic until you pull it off.
Yes.
Until you do the act of
yes.
giving, and then you understand why somebody would say that. But you've got to take that leap of faith.
You do.
Glenn Pichard, our first of our emeritus guests, and thanks so much for being there.
Thank you, Tom, for having me. It's been my honor.